what's in flight. Afternoon delight.
The launch pad. Who's launched today?
Three, two, one.
Bang! That is a launch, and I can tell you this for Trade Prestige. Prestige vehicles at trade prices. That noise was actually Kevin Bartlett's coming off today.
We have got our oldest launcher. Fair and square. He's about to turn 70.
Yes.
He's launched and launched in a big way, and he hasn't taken any prisoners. He goes straight for the top.
Fair to say, KB was scathing towards Gil McLachlan and the AFL Commission this morning after it was reported the AFL hasn't ruled out trialling 16 aside in the 2018 pre-season. That's next year. To ease congestion. Righto. Sit back, relax, take a pill if you've got them, and have a listen to KB this morning.
AFL CEO Gil McLachlan is talking gibberish today. He can be excused, for it was 37 degrees yesterday. He must have been feeling hot and bothered. The league boss says in the Age today they haven't ruled out 16 aside, but it was incredibly unlikely. And in the Herald Sun, he said there was no plans to reduce teams to 16 players. McLachlan says the trials held by four clubs in Sydney, St Kilda, North Melbourne and Geelong is all about being inquisitive and is good leadership and good business. The charter says it's not good business, Gil. You should have a read sometime soon, for it says 18 players is a fundamental element of Australian rules. If McLachlan and the Laws of the Game Committee want to rip up the charter, then come out and say it, with egg all over your face. So, Gil, let's be inquisitive. Why not trial playing with a round ball? It works in soccer. Here's a cracker of an idea. Let's try a rectangular ground. Works for rugby. And let's be inquisitive and trial throwing the ball. Maximum distance allowed? 40 metres. It worked for Tom Brady and the Patriots. Let's be inquisitive and waste everyone's time and not play Australian rules football at all.
Mate, I sat in the Laws of the Game Committee when they decided to get a charter and they said this is going to be set in stone. Go away. Write down things that can't be changed by cowboys and dills. And they come up with a charter and now no one wants to read it.
Well, then they've got written,
give me a break.
Written in the bottom of the charter that there are elements of it that can be changed by the commission from time to time.
Commission.
To help ensure that the game
they can't even see
one of the most
commission.
Spectacular in
they
the world.
They can't even see, Greg, that interchange is killing the game, has been killing the game for years. There's only a couple on the AFL Commission that's got a clue, Greg, that understand. Mike Fitzpatrick is one. He's got a clue. He knows that interchange is shocking for the game and has just about destroyed the game at different stages. He knows it, but the rest of them, I don't think they've got a clue, Greg.
Gil
they might be good
that.
At building shopping centres, Greg. They might be great at banking and financing. Do they know anything about football, Greg? I asked you that question.
Well, you're obviously suggesting not.
They sit there and they watch the game for years and years and years, and now they still can't see that interchange is a killer for the game. And they talk about congestion. They talk about density around the ball.
Zones.
We'll put zones in and we'll have players, umpire will be blowing the whistle and you go over that end of the ground and you go to that corner of the ground. We might drop it down to 16 aside. Why not try 14 aside? We'll try anything, Greg, other than the elephant in the room, which is interchange. And no one's got the courage or the guts to do it. Adrian Anderson had the guts and the courage to do it and they knocked him back.
Righto, we have called Denise and KB has settled down. He's okay. He's sitting back with the blankie over his knees and he's got a little cordial on his left-hand side and he's okay, Ox. So that is the good news.
Yep.
His program of 3 hours was like that for the entire 180 minutes today.
Yep.
I mean, it was amazing. I want to get your view, all right, because he said there, Ox, he said there a second ago that he reckons Gil should read the charter because he'll have egg on his face, but someone who's very dear to this radio station, Patrick Smith, wrote an article, and he wrote this article last Friday, and it reads, however, the last paragraph of the prelude says elements of the charter may be updated by the commission from time to time to help ensure Australian football remains the most spectacular game in the world.
Yep.
So even in the charter that KB made, it does say that it can be changed if the commission deems that it needs to be changed.
Yeah, but it doesn't get changed willy-nilly.
We know that.
It's got to be of almost epic reasons why that is happening.
So your view, please, because it's only about trialling 16 aside.
My view is the same as I love Kevin Bartlett, and I've had the privilege of actually sitting down with him many, many, many times, especially when travelling interstate for football matches. and picking his brain about it. No one knows the game as well as Kevin Bullen. I'm not talking out of
school. I'm with you.
He sees it as the game is the purity of the game. He has a really unbelievable understanding of how the game should look. He's almost visionary when it comes to what the game is supposed to be producing. And everything he says, I don't know what's happened, but I thought in the twilight years you'd put the blanket on and you'd just curl up. But what he's doing is he's actually getting smarter. He is. When I heard that this morning, Marco, yeah. I thought, bravo, about time. Now, I know he doesn't like taking pot shots at too many people, but he does like to protect the game, and he is protecting the game. Now, you can update the charter. Updating the charter is different than changing the charter.
Yeah. It's like an amendment.
No, this isn't an update. This is a change.
But they're not changing anything.
No, if they wanted to change it from 18 to 16, like they're trialling, and if that was the thought process, that isn't an update.
Yeah.
That is a absolute cross out with a red pen, rewrite. That's not an amendment. That is a change.
Yeah, absolutely. That is a change. And I'm with you. But here is my point. He's saying you can't change the charter. You can't. But in the charter's very own prelude, it actually states that you can change the charter.
Yeah, you can update it.
But I don't understand why he spent 3 hours today jumping up and down that you can't change the charter when no one's going to change the charter just at the moment. They were just testing 16 aside.
But why test something that you can't introduce?
Imagine if it changed the look of AFL forever and it became the most spectacular game.
Let's change professional golf to 17 holes.
Well, I don't think it's going to get many legs.
Well, why? Because it's quicker. It'll be better for TV. It'll be faster. Blah 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 blah.
Yeah. Well,
this is KB's point. The fundamentals of the charter are there to protect.
I understand.
The unique style of what the game is doing.
I understand, Ox. I understand. But would he be happy? Okay. Would KB be happy if they trialed a practice match with no interchange?
No, I think.
Would KB be happy if they trialled that?
I don't know what
he'd
KB...
He'd have to be.
Why?
Because that's what he's been going on about
for the last five years. No, he's not talking about no interchange. He's saying bring it back, level it out.
Because the big white
elephant in the room is that interchange has changed the game. And as a result, we're trying to change all the other things. Yet this big white thing with a trunk and four legs and tusks is sitting there looking at us saying, all you have to do is reduce the interchange and the game will slow down and come back to where has to be.
All right, well, I'll take it from a different way. If they've trialed 16 a team, if they've trialed zones, surely the next trial is very limited interchange. Surely that is next. It's got to happen.
Well, it has to.
It has to happen.
But this is what Kevin's saying. It isn't happening because they're trialing all this other stuff that is just irrelevant. If you don't need to trial this other stuff, trial the stuff that's actually going to make a change.
Mm. Well, my point is, don't jump up and down saying your charter can never be changed when the actual prelude of the charter says that it can.
It can be updated.
Whatever. Change. So 9-4-2-9-11-16, we'll take some calls in a tick. Now, yes or no, Ox, do you believe 16 aside could work?
No, Marco.
Right,
no.
Done. We'll move on. AFL Players Association CEO Paul Marsh spoke to Brekkie to respond to reports a resolution to the ongoing pay dispute is near. Let's have a listen.
Oh, I think it would be fair to say we're closer. We are progressing. There's still a lot of work to be done, though, so I wouldn't be taking from the article that, you know, we're days or, you know, even, you know, a week or two away. There's a lot of work to be done, but we are having positive discussions and, you know, hopefully we can get there soon.
Paul, the reports seem to suggest that there is a mechanism that will guarantee the players a cut of unbudgeted industry revenues. Now, I'm quoting directly from the paper. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the central point we're discussing at the moment. And I think to give you some background and some context to this, I guess if you consider revenue in two parts, there's the forecast revenue. So the AFL will tell us that this is what they think the industry's revenue will look like going into the future. And, you know, there's an element of a known amount of revenue there. And historically, the PA and the AFL have been able to agree to what we think is a fair share for the players out of that money. The issue has been that when the revenue ends up being more than that, and every single year it is more than what the numbers are forecast, in our view, the players haven't been getting their share of that revenue. So maybe, you know, to illustrate, let's say that industry revenue was at $100 next year. That's what the AFL tells us. The AFL and the PA will then negotiate what we think is a fair fair share of that for the players. But if revenue ends up being $120, we haven't been getting a share of that or a fair share of that $20. And that's really where the conversation is centred at the moment. I think we are making some good progress, but look, you'd be appreciated. It is complex. You know, as per Gil's comments, you know, I think that you know, there's a way through this. It's hard to put a time frame on this. You know, if both parties, with a bit of good intent, get in the room and just continue to nut this out until it's done, it can happen pretty quickly. But yeah, next week might be a bit of a stretch.
So you got Paul Marsh there talking to Sam McClure this morning on Brekkie. Which was fantastic to have a listen to. Robbo's article is a ripper, and I reckon Gil is going to win this one kind of in a way, because Gil, he'll be able to go back to the commission and say they didn't get any more than the 10% that we were going to give them anyway. And then I think the players are also going to go back and say, hey, boys, we've got a fixed percentage.
There'll be common ground met here. There'll be no sitting down in the series, and that's good. That's good for everybody.
Hey, a lot of people wondering... The interchange bench in rotations,
yes.
They're not listed in the fundamentals of the charter.
Of course they're not. That's why you can change it.
Got nothing to do with it. Got nothing to do with it. Hey, one more time.
Yes.
And I am not suggesting, people think I'm suggesting it's 16 aside. I'm not suggesting it. But you tell me why 16 aside shouldn't work. And you don't want to see it work.
What it does, it changes 120 years of history. The game has been played with 18 aside on the ground for 120 years. Forwards, half forwards, centremen, which are the two wings.
I get it.
Half backs and full backs and the rucks and the ruck rovers. So what you do is you might as well just tear up 120 years of history and reset, which I'm not willing to do.
I'm not willing
to change the game, to change the setup of what football is right now. And I think if you do change it, you change the game forever because it becomes a different... It becomes a hybrid game. It becomes... I don't know. It loses its soul, Marco.
Yes, I get it. But I'm still keen to see it and just have a look. And if it doesn't fix things, then we go straight back to 18. Anyway, let's get the callers. Pete and Peran. G'day, Pete.
Yeah, g'day, boys. I heard KB this morning actually rip shreds out of Gil McLaughlin. I've got two things to say. One, that's about as motivational or inspirational a speech as the old John Kennedy do something. And secondly, had KB been participating, wouldn't have mattered whether it was Mundine or Danny Green, there would have been a clear win around one.
Thank you, Pete. Rod's next on the road. G'day, Rod.
G'day, Marco and Ox. How are you guys?
Well, Rod.
Yeah. What do you call? I also heard KB's tirade this morning, and he needs to take a cup of tea and a Bex, quite seriously. What do you call? While I appreciate his sentiments, things are not set in stone. They can be changed. Mm. And there's no point in saying that they can't, because they can. And also, let's try to see if we might even be able to improve things. I think this is the reason why people decide to do things.
Yep.
To improve the game. Not
you reckon the game's stuff, right, or do you reckon it's going all right?
I don't think it's that bad, to be frank.
Well, this is the point that Kevin's trying to make. If it's not too bad and there's only a couple of little tweaks, why try and change the whole fundamental of what football is from 18 to 16?
Thank you, Rod. Thanks for the call. How about this text? Although I'm only 18 years old, I'm more in love with the game than ever. Please don't change anything to do with the amount of players on the field or by adding zones.
God bless you, young fella.
Well done, young man. Peter's
18
in
too. What a fool. What an age.
Peter is in Ashburton. G'day, Pete.
G'day, guys. How are you going?
Good, Pistol.
That's good. Just a quick point on the interchange. It was initially brought in for tactical reasons, not hijacked by the fitness gurus who then hijacked it, and then we went up the rotations. It should go back to about 15 a quarter. That would be good. But the ones I saw, in the old days when you watch the footage, the field umpires throw the ball up a lot quicker. I watched the boundary umpires over the last 2 years. They seem to wait for the ruckman to turn up and do their little dance, turn around and flip up. Just throw the ball in and let's get the game going.
Look, I agree with that absolutely. But you know what's going to happen? We can't do that now because we have to have the rucks nominated.
Man up, you've got to be nominated.
So we have to nominate them. So I think that part of the game is going to slow down. Another stupid rule.
Yeah, we've got to wait. That's a good point, Ox. Thank you, Peter.
Stupid.
Billy is in Berwick. G'day, Billy.
Marco and the great Theo.
Billy
good to
boy.
Have you back on, Bill. A bit of sensibility.
The second one's important. I need to discuss with you both. The first one. Leave the game alone. KB's got to get over the fact he can't change the rules anymore. Let it go. No more changes.
Righto.
All right. I've got a a couple of years of the same thing, we know what we're getting. The second one, most important one, I'm playing at Amesbury, I believe it's called.
Ooh, buckle in, good course.
Don't play off the backs, Billy. Just off the front tees, it's fine. It's a long course.
I've heard it's not built for 100 kilo fat fellas drinking beer by foot either.
Yeah.
It is if you've got the cart.
Stay away from the Masters tees, Billy, and you'll love it.
Hey, Marco, good one off the SMS. If 16-a-side is so appealing, why did the VFA get rid of it?
I think the VFA stopped. No, I'm not saying do it.
Oh, I'm
don't it. Get me. I'm not saying do it. I am saying let's just have a look. And if it probably doesn't do anything. In fact, they've probably had a look at it and gone, that doesn't do anything. Don't worry about it. But don't stop people from having a look. It's just narrow-minded rubbish. It is rubbish. Let people look.
Soccer are going to change to 9 players a team.
Are they?
And no goalkeeper. just to give it a freshen up.
I think that'll get knocked on the head. Joe's in Blackburn. G'day, Joe.
Yeah, how are you, boys? I want to put something else on the agenda. I want to know who does the golf course rankings, and I'll give you a bit of an example. Been lucky enough in the last year to play your two home courses, 13th Beach and Kingston Heath. Mm. I reckon 13th is a way better course.
You won't be alone. You won't be alone there, Joe. There'll be people very much like-minded with you, but that's why they have a massive panel. They have like 100 people doing it. So not just one opinion gets it turned over. So it's a majority thing, really. But
you know, I did speak to some of the pros down here. And
yeah. Well, they say...
No, some of them say that this is their favourite tournament of the year. Not just for the course, but for what it is. But they believe the course here is spectacular, and it is in unbelievable condition. It's amazing what happens, though, when you get a little bit of funding, the improvements that can be made on a golf course.
Right, no doubt. Good on you, Joe. Thanks
but it
for
is better than Kingston Heath, you're right.
I don't think that is correct, but it is very, very, very good. John's on the road. G'day, Johnny.
G'day, guys. How you going?
Good, John. Well.
Look, just, you know, when I play the game, at training sessions, and, Ox, you know, you'd have to agree with this. When not all the blokes turn up and you've got 13, maybe 14, 15 aside, the game is fast flowing and no stoppages and congestion. You can't deny that, Ox. You would have participated in a training session when not everybody turned up and the game flows beautifully.
You're joking, aren't you?
No, he's not joking.
It's for a little...
Please tell me that you haven't experienced that at a training session before.
Absolutely, circle work. Absolutely, you can create as much space as you want, but that's not what footy is. Footy isn't about free flowing, and footy is about all the things that bring the game together, which is a bit of congestion, a bit of high marking, a bloody lot of tackling, a lot of skill with by foot or by hand, not knowing where the hits are going to come from. I don't want to see players just out in space having a bounce and running into openness every time they get the footy. I want to see the game as it has been played. Last year's final series, I look back and I go, how good was that? How good was the GWS Bulldogs game?
Yeah, brilliant.
Now, if we want to take it away from that, where it was contest after contest after contest, and it was the game of inches, Marco, and we've heard that saying 100 times, it was a game of inches. Well, blow me down. Go and play volleyball, or go and play another game that is a hybrid game, because the game we've got is special, and it works well how it is.
Well said. Good on you, Johnny. Thank you for calling.
So let's see, Asafa Powell, he got away as you'd expect. He's going to gobble up the lead early. So China been taken by Powell. Now Powell to Bolt. Riley Day, Usain's on. First time we've ever seen him run in Australia. Flies the back straight. Riley Day's back in third place. The fastest man of all time. Hands the bat. Could Brandini keep up? Oh, she did. I reckon she got it. Job done. Riley Day gets the bat to Alex Hartman. The Aussies are back in third place. Brandini final bat. Shade or Tamo, wait a minute, everything's sweet. The All-Stars are just that, aren't they? Where are the Aussies? They're at about fourth or fifth place. Tamo brings them home. Closing Japan, closing Australia. Gee, Jack Hale, what a run by the 18-year-old. He came from the clouds and got third.
Bruce McAvaney there, calling all the action last Sunday night. It was the mixed 4 by 100-metre relay. Usain Bolt in the second leg for the Bolt All-Stars. And Jack Hale, just an absolute winner, that kid. I love watching him run. Modem home. I think they were eighth and they ended up third, or might have been sixth and came to third. The second night of the Nitro Athletics with Usain Bolt in action is tonight at Lakeside Stadium. You can purchase last-minute tickets at ticketmaster.com.au, or you can try your luck at the gate. You should probably get a spot, or catch it live on 7 Mate from 7 p.m. tonight. A little bit of clear air for the Nitro. John Stevenson, we spoke about this before the break. The creator of the Nitro Athletics with Usain Bolt has joined us on the run home. G'day, John.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Hey, we're really well. You're sounding nice and relaxed there. I like it.
I've got to do the broadcast today, so I was just sleeping, man, trying to get my energy right. Bruce gets you too hyped, man. So I got to match his energy.
John, we hear so many good things about it. Last week, we've seen some events that we've never seen before. It's caught everybody's eye. I listen to this radio station all the time, and just the feedback has been incredible. You've got athletes from Europe who wanted to come, who didn't come, and now they want to come. How did this concept become? I mean, what made you think of Nitro Athletics?
Yeah, well, look, we're truly blessed. You know, whenever you do something new, you never know how it's going to be received. You've seen with Women's AFL last year when they launched it and it got received the way it did. It allowed you to progress, and now we see it as a full-fledged competition, you know, and athletes just needed this. And when myself and our president, Mark, I'll be at dinner at Crown and Nobu about 8 months ago, we just decided, let's disrupt the game. You know, track and field, the program's been the same for like 100 years. And we were like, why hasn't anybody made the change? And we took a bit of a punt and a gamble, and through all of our sponsors and backers that believed in us, we were able to put on the event that we did last Saturday. Now, look, there's still places we can improve, but, you know, as a star, I feel we got a pass mark and we did very well. We just now have to improve from there, and it helps having the fastest man in the world in town.
John, it was as though you put jumper leads onto something that was not dead, but it certainly needed a jump start.
Definitely.
And as Marco said, it's given voice again. It's given interest because that was dying.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a big problem with Olympic sports, you know, because you're heavily financed by the Sports Commission, that there's just sometimes no need to really commercialise an Olympic sport. And I think that can become really dangerous because you can't wait every 4 years because these kids need to eat, man, in between Olympic Games. Mm. So, you know, it's great having Mark as our president because he really gets it. So, and he knows my love for the sport, and you know, we've worked together outside of athletics, and he knows my passion for business as well. And it was an easy train. It's been hard, you know, it's been hard to convince people because it was a product that people just pretty much commercially didn't want to touch. So we're really, really excited that we were able to deliver something that as good as what it was on Saturday. But now, like I keep saying, we just have to improve, and we're hoping in maybe 8 months' time to have a Nitro in Europe. So we're just, like I said, my biggest muse is Dana White and the UFC. I just think what they've created is just so, so cool. And they turned a sport that nobody wanted to touch. It was banned in most states in America into what it is today. And and that was sort of my motivation when I spoke to Mark. And, you know, guys, you know, I always take a risk. You know, I always do things differently. So it's cool. It's really, really cool.
Hey, John, I'm just having a look at some of the key events tonight in the paper. The men's 100, we understand it. But Jack Hale taking on Asafa Powell, I want to see that. The mixed 4x100-meter relay, I saw it on Saturday night. And it's just seeing the men taking on the women, seeing Usain Bolt in the second leg and Jack Hale come home. It was just fantastic to watch. But the elimination mile, tell me how the elimination mile works.
I love this race. Now, Bolt All-Stars has a young guy by the name of Matt Ramsden who ran at World Juniors last year. If you watch that race on YouTube, he basically fought 12 rounds before he even got to the last lap. He's a very aggressive runner. So he won the elimination mile last Saturday, and we call him Rambo. So, and that's Usain's favorite athlete on the team at the moment. So how it works is each lap a runner gets eliminated. But what it does now, it changes the tactics of a normal mile because you got guys that aren't as good and know they can't win the overall event that go out really hard in the beginning to make sure they don't get eliminated in the first two laps, which then changes the tactics for the guys that are actually going to win because they can find themselves at the back. So it's a real tricky race because last week you saw them go out really hard in the first lap and then all of a sudden hit the handbrakes and they were basically walking the next 200 trying to get their breath back. So Jeff Risey, who's a great Australian runner who's made Olympic Games, said that was one of the hardest races he's ever done. So it's just things, little things like that, which which is really cool to watch, which is engaging. Yeah, allows the crowd that are live and allows a viewer that's watching on Channel 7 to question and say, no, I wouldn't have done it that way. Maybe I would have gone that way. And even with the 4x1, you see now the all-stars went male, female, female. Now you're going to see tonight that they might, a lot of other teams are going to go male, female, female because it works so well for the Bolt all-stars. But I've got little intel that the Bolt all-stars have changed their order tonight. So I want to see how it plays out because I really feel they could lose tonight, to be honest with you. So, and they might make a major comeback Saturday.
Any other initiatives that you're looking at, like, I don't know, jumping crocodiles for the long jump, or is it because the world's your oyster? You can be as creative as you like, John.
Yeah, well, it's funny, you know, like ever since the first event on our social media, so many people have been coming up with so many different ideas, which is cool. We got people talking, which is really nice, you know. But I know on the last night, the long jump, there's going to be no fouls, so we can actually really see the longest jump. Because Jaron Lawson, who's the world number one, he jumped the furthest last year with the distance 858 and should have won the Olympics last year, but unfortunately got fouled out with his hand touching the sand before he landed. So we'll actually hopefully be able to measure the longest jump. That's right. which is just those little things, you know.
Don't mind the crocodile idea myself.
Yeah, you see the crocodiles yesterday at the MCG. I still almost ate a staff of power. So
hey, Johnny, good luck. Good luck and congratulations with what you've done.
Well done.
Thank you very much, guys. Take care.
Johnny Stephenson there, creator of Nitro Athletics. Now, tickets for tonight at ticketmasters.com.au or at the gate and live on 7, mate, from 7 p.m. Saturday night is sold out.
We've got a charge happening, Marco.
Oi, what's happening?
Jared Lyle.
Oi.
4 under through 12 in pretty tough conditions.
Okay. And they talk about congestion. They talk about density around the ball.
Zones.
We'll put zones in and we'll have players. Umpire will be blowing the whistle and you go over that end of the ground and you go to that corner of the ground. We might drop it down to 16 a side. Why not try 14 a side? We'll try anything, Greg, other than the elephant in the room, which is interchange. And no one's got the courage or the guts to do it.
Passion. That's all I'm going to say. There's been a lot of passion today. And Kevin Bartlett and his three-hour program, Hungry for Sports,
he was
plenty
passionate.
Of it. Did not stop for 3 hours today. So we thought we'd get someone on who really understands the game better than most. Legendary coach, these days SEN commentator, Mick Malthouse has joined us on Melbourne's Home of Footy. G'day, Mick.
Good afternoon, lads. Change of weather, which is terrific.
Yeah, beautiful now. Nice for an afternoon walk, I reckon. Mick, 16 aside. Now, the AFL have been trialling 16-a-side. There is no mention of it coming into the competition, but it is making people very passionate. People off our SMS machine, callers, and certainly KB on his program today. None of us have seen the 16-a-side being trialled, but we want to get into your mind a little bit and understand what you think, if it ever happens, 16-a-side would do to our competition.
Well, it certainly would work. I mean, there's no question if you take four players off the ground, you're going to have reduced numbers. But if it's designed to stop a certain type of play, which might be congestion around a stoppage, unless you implement a rule that's going to forbid certain number of players being at the stoppage, you're always going to get congestion because some sides want it. Clearly, some don't. The Dogs last year. They invited stoppages because they were so good at it. Sydney were quite good at it as well. There are other sides that aren't so good, so therefore they would say, no, we want the ball out in the open, and there's a lot of sides that do like that. But I personally, 16 aside, you know, we had a division way back when we had the VFL and the VFA,
yep.
And it was virtually split down the middle because of 18 sides for the VFL and 16 for the VFA. And that was the distinction. And when you analyse those games, a lot of those games were played on small grounds, the VFA. There's still the Frankston ground, Sandringham ground, et cetera, et cetera. And you just did away with it. But in today's football, it's just a matter of transporting one or two of your four flanks or pockets further up the ground. And then you still get the congestion. So I think you're either going to make a decision that you're going to have limited numbers around the football and you can police it. Look, they've got three umpires now. And if the boundary umpires are in position and they can get 20 metres square of the ball wherever it's been bounced and two umpires can police, that's quite simple, really, if that's what you want, if you want to reduce the numbers around the ball.
Mick, you were a big part of the increase of interchange rotations that you found that it was a great way of freshening up your players. KB's big one is that this is the problem, that there's too many interchanges allowed, that we need to pull that back. It's a big white elephant in the room, that if we fix that, then we don't even have to go looking at other things because the game will go back to where it probably needs to be.
Well, I don't know whether we've just witnessed one of the great grand finals, and we keep saying where we want the game to be. I just don't get, for every brand of football in the world, you're going to have your top games and you're going to have some scrappy, ordinary games. And that let's face it, back when you were playing Ox, you'd have your, say, half a dozen top sides that when they met, they had some great games and you'd have some scrappy games. It'll never change. An 18-team competition is never going to have nine great games. And if we want to keep saying, oh, we'll go back to the past, what are we going back to? Because the more you look back, the more you cringe and go, oh, you know, were our kicks like that? Oh, were we just floating the ball up like that? Were our hand passes occasional? Were our tackles missed? I think we've got to take the game the way it is. If we want to see the game opened up, and now we've made another rule now that's been brought about by the league in regard to the ruckman. Your 199, 200 centimetre ruckman, they're going to do it very, very hard compared to last year. So straight away, you've got Sandilands at 211, and you've got a couple of others at a 27 and 208. They'll push the ball where they want to if they haven't got a ruckman of similar size. So we've already seen a major shift in the interpretation of ruck work around the stoppage. Why not let that take place before we start to knee-jerk react and think about reducing numbers on the ground? Because even, as I said, reducing numbers will not necessarily reduce congestion because, look, if I was coaching and I wanted a congestion, I'd just bring my players up to that stoppage. If you don't want congestion, then okay, have your rucks, have your midfield, and no one else is allowed near it. Now, that's a very, very drastic rule, but it's achievable. Any rule's achievable if you have got the, in this case, the umpires, train right to interpret the way the AFL want it. So, but we've got to be careful about how often we change the rule to get back to the old way. The old way is not necessarily the best way.
Yeah, Mick, I want to talk to you about that because numbers around the ball is designed to outnumber the opposition, I imagine, then you run it towards your goals, whichever way they may be. You tell me. Go on.
Well, not necessarily because, look, some sides just don't cope with congestion. And you stop the runners from outside. So, in other words, if you get your hand in the football first and you're able to stop your runners, stop the opposition runners, then the game gets turned on its head. If you, Ox said about, but as far as when I increased the numbers of interchange, it was to get an advantage. What it was, it really was to bring us back into the competition because we were sadly undermanned in the middle. We had a lot of good kids coming through, but they weren't A-graders, and we were playing up against a lot of A-graders. And the idea behind the system of introducing as many rotations as I could was to introduce more players through the middle and work over their best players. Now, as it turned out, eventually I ended up with, Penelbury and Swan and Ball and a whole heap of other good players. But that come later after the thing. So, the genesis of all these moves are, what do we really want to achieve with them? And once you identify what you want, then you've got to look at the possibilities of how you do rotate that change. And, we've already got one that'll come in this year with the ruckman.
Mick, the game itself, when you look at it and all these proposals that are being put forward, like zoning and 16-a-side, are you for any of the... Have you heard of anything that you've gone, yeah, that makes a bit of sense?
I like the ruckman. Let ruckman be ruckman. I like the ruckman can put the hand up and they are identified as the ruckman. I think that you'll see a lot more now of the genuine ruck play that we... And here I am going back in nostalgic times, but, I mean... And we'll never get back to this unless we have a zone in around the football, the Polly Farmer and the John Nichols type scenario. You're not going to get that unless you reduce numbers. But what you're going to get now is a genuine ruckman being able to use the ball with their hand and push the ball to where these midfielders are in regard to your training, what you go through to get moving to the football. So that's a terrific rule, and the rule that when we bought the circles, that was an outstanding rule because it's protected the ruckman being able to go at the ball over that course of three or four steps and protect their knees, and we haven't lost as many ruckmen. So there are some terrific rules. Then there's others that are sort of patchy, and then it's the way they're interpreted anyway.
Mick, I reckon the people who are trying to get rid of the congestion and thinking of these things, their dream is that at an interchange somewhere, at a ruck contest or around the ground in general, that everybody's back in the old positions. Forward pockets, half-back flanks, everyone two-on-two, right around the ground.
Well, you won't get that with 16.
Yeah.
But you will get it. You will get it if you say you've got designated mids or designated people around the ball. I mean, and that's just a matter of once the umpire declares it's his ball, in other words, a ball up, then, you know, the sides have got to have, what, three each or four each, ruckman plus three others. Others are out. Okay, that's achievable because it's only a matter of stepping back 10, 15 metres. That's achievable because that takes less than probably a second and a half if you want to do that. I do not see anything wrong with the great games of last year. Mm. When we look at the great games, we all come away going, wow, what a great game. And you know what? The more you look at it, the more you see congestion, but then you see the ability of blokes like Libertore, but now they get that ball out to their runners or to... it might be Dangerfield on the fly because Selwood's got the ball out there. And we look at it and we go, how fantastic. It's only when they get stopped occasionally. You know, Mitchell's hands, we say that Mitchell's hands are the greatest hands we've seen in football. Now, he set up Smith. He would set up Birchall, et cetera, et cetera. And we're in awe of it. But they're Mick, good enough to win the ball under pressure.
Mick, if we did reduce the interchanges... or even scrapped it all together, if we went right back, if we stripped it right back, do you reckon the recruiting of players would change that instead of recruiting the Diesel Williams and pure footballers, that you'd be looking at more endurance-based athletes to ensure that they get through the 120 minutes?
I wouldn't have thought so. Football's won by footballers. It's rarely won by athletes. Over the journey, yeah, we might have one that pops up and runs around and he looks fantastic. It's the consistency. You talk about Williams, talk about Mitchell... All these players that everyone says they're too slow, they last a long time. They keep winning the football. They'll continue to win the football because they've got football now. Give me a footballer any day of the week and you win more games than you lose against an athlete.
Thank goodness.
Mick, I reckon you've given us some beautiful nuggets of clarity there. I absolutely love what you've been saying and it does make sense to me. But if I did throw you the keys of the competition and I said, Mick, make a change. Make one change. Here you go. You've got the power. Let it rip. Would you change anything?
I think, well, I'd probably give a little bit more time to the fullback and the game itself. Mm-hmm. My view on time. I think the game goes for too long.
Yep.
So I would not have any time on from the ball being out of bounds or kicked through the points. We know there's 30-second gap for goals because it's a commercial break and that's fair enough. But any other time, unless the ball is lost. Now, we know that there's a bucket full of balls behind the goals. The ball goes into the stand from a boundary throw-in. Okay, you whistle time off, but it runs over the boundary. Do not stop the game because of that, because that's just natural. We've got boundary umpires everywhere. So I would say the game will naturally reduce in time, and you'll have you'll have less blowouts at the end because it'll probably go for roughly... 100 minutes, roughly 100 minutes, as opposed to what we're seeing, 120, 130 minutes.
Good on you, Mick. We're looking forward to a big year here on 11:16 SEN Footy. You're on Saturdays, and we can't wait. Thanks for joining
us. Thanks, Mick.
It's a pleasure, lads. All the best.
Good on you. Mick Malthouse there, coaching legend. I love Mick Ox. I love listening to him speak. And, you know, we're talking about all this stuff and trying to get rid of
Collingwood
congestion.
Man, Marco. There's a bit of bias there.
Yeah, there is a bit of that, but
yeah,
I do.
That's right. There's really, nothing wrong with that.
Anyway, well, you went to Carlton too, by the way, and didn't do a bad job at West Coast. But I like listening to him talk and just hearing him say about the really good games last year and how good they were and seeing different players get out of congestion.
Mm-hmm.
And you hark back and go, you know what he's saying there is exactly right. It does make you think a little bit. And I do like the idea of it coming down to 100 minutes of footy as well. Ox down at 13th Beach, and it's just a little cool change coming through. Don't forget the soapbox after 5 o'clock, and Mark Robbo Robinson after 6. Now, today I was listening to Dennis Pagan driving in, Ox, and
what a man.
I love Dennis Pagan. He, If he was giving me a spray, I don't know why I get the giggles listening to Dennis
Pagan. I got the spray off you. I got the Tarzan Jane spray in...
Did you really?
Yeah, in 1989 Teal Cup.
How was that?
Oh, it was great. At the MCG, South Australia playing Victoria. There was about 85,000 there, and we played the curtain raiser.
And?
And he gave it to me.
Look like Tarzan, play like Jane,
you're big wussy, and you know, you have a go and all this sort of stuff. All right.
I was driving in today, and he said this. I want you to have a listen.
We were the best side by the length of the Flemington Strait in 98. I think we might have won 20 games. We can all our finals, and maybe we got a little bit in front of ourselves. But I've always believed the best side doesn't win grand finals. The best side on the day does, and Adelaide were the best side on the day, regardless of what happened prior to grand final day.
Righto, so I'm driving in, and he goes, the best side doesn't win grand finals. The best side on the day wins grand finals. Yeah. And I'm thinking,
bit of nugget.
That is a magnificent
little nugget.
Nugget of clarity.
Yep.
Now, we just heard Mick Malthouse a little while ago. Now, Susan picked up, and she just texted one in, right? Football is won by footballers.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful nugget, just a little nugget of clarity. Arnold Palmer, here's another one. This is from one I always remembered. He used to say, because he was a brilliant putter, one of the best putters you've ever seen. But he used to say that, I'm not the best putter out here, I'm the best green reader.
Ah, there you go.
A beautiful nugget of clarity. So 9429 1116, you got one?
Oh, well, the simple one is we've got a guy down here. His name's Rodney Lawn. He's a fisherman.
Yeah.
And they go, gee, Rodney always catches fish. And he goes, well, the more I fish, the more I catch.
See? That is a magnificent nugget of clarity.
Yeah.
Absolutely perfect. Another one, Mick Malt. Now, I picked this one out of it as well. Mick Malthouse speaking a second ago. Have a listen.
I do not see anything wrong with the great games of last year. Mm. When we look at the great games, we all come away going, wow, what a great game. And you know what? When the more you look at it, the more you see congestion. But then you see the ability of blokes like Libertore, but now they get that ball out to their runners, or to it might be Bangerfield on the fly because Selwood's got the ball out to him. We look at it and we go, how fantastic!
Nuggets of clarity, congestion. Yeah. Don't worry about congestion. Let's look for the blokes who can get out of congestion. That is a nugget of clarity. 9429 1116. You know, Robbo is in after six. He's got a ripper. And I know it.
He loves nuggets.
The one that we always get is, don't pick fights with blokes who buy their ink in barrels.
In barrels.
Magnet.
You know what? That is probably the best one of all time.
I reckon it sounds like Rupert Murdoch might have said something like that once upon a time, but that is a magnificent nugget of clarity. 9429 1116. Full ball to calls. Let's get going. Tom's in Whittlesea. G'day, Tom.
How are you?
Yeah, good, Tommy.
The only way to be good at something is to keep doing it.
That's exactly right.
Mm.
Unless it's failure.
Unless you're rubbish.
If you continue to fail,
unless you are no good. Thank you, Tom. Nick's in Mernda. G'day, Nick. Give us a nugget of clarity.
Yeah, guys. It's in relation to downhill skiing. It's from this classic movie no one's probably ever heard of, Better Off Dead. But it's the guys at the top of the hill with a slalom skier ready to go, John Cusack. And he goes, go that way really fast. If something gets in your way, turn. Pure and simple.
Beautiful. Yeah, I like that. That's a really simple one. Go that way really fast. If something gets in your way, turn.
Thank you, Nick. Right. Greg's in Moorabbin. G'day, Gregory.
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen. Sir Richard Hadlee, I grew up believing him and played cricket, and he said, a winner never quits and a quitter never wins.
Oh, beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
I don't know who said this one. I remember this one. I can't remember who said it, but if you hang around knobs, you become a knob.
Oh, that sounds like something you'd say.
Yeah, I might have. I can't remember where I heard it. Might have been at the tab. I don't know who told me that one, Marco.
Thanks, Greg. Mick on the road. Keep them coming, folks. 9429 1116. You've got a nugget of clarity. Mick, g'day. Michael.
Yes, Mark. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
I've got one which you can probably relate to.
Yeah.
The winner that's in front of the final siren or the final bell or the last hole in a golf pennant match, if they're in front at the last hole, they're normally the winner.
A little bit too simplistic for me, Michael, but thank you.
Two off the SMS, never do groceries when you're hungry.
Yeah, beautiful.
Don't know who said that one. And don't marry a woman with a tattoo of a dagger.
That is Confucius-like, that one.
You know what, that's pretty... I think that one might be right. think that one might be right.
Steve's on the road. G'day, Stevie. Oh, no, sorry. Yep. Go, Stevie.
Yeah, this one probably relates to KB. You don't have to have a long neck to be a goose.
Good.
See, good. I'm very clear on that. Very good, Steve. Thank you. Another Michael in Hawthorne. G'day, Mick.
Yeah, how you going?
Yeah, well.
Yeah, one from Tom Hafey. There's nothing more tigerish than a tiger.
What happened after he said that, you reckon? See, imagine you're sitting down with the boys, you know, Michael Moncrief's there and KB and, you know, all the Tiger boys who are going to just win this grand final, whatever game it was, and Tom Hafey comes down and says, there's nothing more tigerish than a tiger.
Hey, Marco, we're up playing Brisbane and we're in the hotel room.
Yeah.
And Neil Danaher was giving an inspirational speech, and Adam Uzay had a bit of hamstring problems, and he goes, yeah. And Uz, you could tear your hamstring off the bone today, and you see Uz's face go, oh, shit, oh, my hamstring's no good. And then he goes, because this game will spit you up and chew you out. We kind of looked at each other and go, ugh, yuck. Like this. He had no idea. And then for the next 5 years, that was the joke.
That was it.
Hey, come off the SMS. Wayne Gretzky, you miss 100% of shots you don't take.
That's true.
If at first you don't succeed, so much for skydiving.
Right. I like that one. Where are John's in Bundoora. Thank you. G'day, John.
G'day, boys. How are you? We in store manufacture beer line, beer system.
Yeah.
Our vans are trying to write all that sort of stuff. And they're, oh, you actually put like, beer taps in and what? That's my standard line is now, well, someone's got to do it.
Someone's got to do it. Okay.
Not me. Someone's got to do it.
Mick and Nary Warren. G'day, Mick.
G'day, Oxy and Mike. How are we?
Good, Mick. Good to have you back on, mate.
That's the way. Yeah. It's good to see you on the afternoon show, Ox.
It's something different.
Arvos, mate.
Something different.
Yeah, good stuff. Hey, listen, I've got a nugget of clarity for you. What about the old Greg Chappell saying? I'm not betting badly, but I just keep going out.
Yep. That was a nugget at the time. Yeah. It was almost an oxymoron, wasn't it?
Here's a couple of rippers from the weekend. Go hard or go home. Forrest Gump's mum, stupid is as stupid does.
What about before you marry the calf, have a look at the cow?
Yeah.
It's always a bit, you know what? That is very sharp.
Yeah, not too bad that one at all. Thanks to all our callers, all our texters coming up. Andrew Travis is the Gold Coast CEO, and he joins us on Melbourne's Home of Footy. G'day, Andrew.
G'day, mate. How you going?
Yeah, I'm really well, thanks. Thanks for joining us. Congratulations, first of all. Finally, the new facilities up there at the Gold Coast have been unveiled today. No more in portables, no more all over the joint. It sounds like you've got an Olympic-style facility all set to go. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, it's a great facility and a great feeling to finally be under one roof for the first time in the history of our club, to have all our people in the one spot and not running around at different sites and getting out of the tin sheds. It sort of feels like the last part of building an AFL club on the Gold Coast is now being completed.
Andrew, was it too late? Oh, sorry, I'll rephrase that. Did it take too long to get to this point, considering GWS, who came in a bit after you guys, they've been pretty settled for a year or so now?
Yeah, they have. Yeah, look, we certainly thought we were on a 2 to 3 year plan in temporary facilities. It's blown out to 7. No doubt we needed to be in better facilities earlier, but we also needed to have some funding and a plan to be able to deliver them, and that just took some time.
How bad was it? I'd been up there, I'd seen the facilities. They were literally portables, like classroom facilities.
Classroom facilities. Our gym was a big green shed, so you can imagine this time of year in 37-degree heat, it's probably not the best environment to be working out in. So, they served us well. It teaches you some resilience in the early days, but eventually we've got an elite team that we want to deliver elite results, and you've got to give them a proper work environment, and we now have that.
I want to look forward, but Travis, hearing that, hearing the conditions and knowing how hot it is up there in pre-season time, it must have been a factor impacting on the club's on-field performance.
Oh, what's interesting talking to the guys now is that they're trying to put weight on young guys, and they'd end up going into the gym and sweating off 2 or 3 kilos rather than actually putting the weight on. So, it just wasn't ideal. And we don't have to worry about any of that.
What about the mood of the club at the moment, Andrew? I mean, you've lost Jaeger O'Meara. It's Rocket's been there for a little while. I'm just got in front of me right now. I'm just having a look at the champion data AFL prospectus that was delivered here, and I'm looking at the elite and the above average players for Gold Coast. And there's only three elite: May, Lynch, and Ablett. And above average is only Ahmed Saad, Nichols, Miller, and Lyons. What's the mood like for 2017?
Yeah, now the mood's been fantastic all through the pre-season. Obviously, there's some list changes, as you alluded to there, at the end of last year. But we feel like we've got much more depth on our list at the moment. We're now into a new facility. We've had a change in the leadership. There's a lot of momentum heading into the season.
Is it true that you and Port Adelaide, I'm not sure, seeing eye to eye about the jumper and the game in China, that obviously the Chinese colours are red and yellow, that there's a bit of a crossover there. Has there been any words said between you and Port Adelaide re your jumper?
No, but we have clarified that we'll be wearing our red and yellow jumper for the game. That's the colours we wear every time we play Port Adelaide, and it's sort of from our end, there doesn't seem to be any issue with that. That's sort of what will be happening in China next year.
Well, it kind of works in your favour, I would have thought, Andrew. a nice little get, because how many billion Chinese love the yellow and red and yellow flag? And you blokes turn up, you might have all the support.
Yeah, well, they're our colours, and as you say, they're strong colours with passion over there in China. So that'd be great if that was the case.
Has the ground been finalised for the game?
The venue's been finalised, obviously there's a bit of work to be done between now and May to get it up to AFL standard, and I understand that's all well underway.
What about a couple of nice signatures, one in particular, Tuke Miller, re-signed with the club yesterday until 2019. Pretty important young man, I would have thought, for your organisation.
Absolutely, yeah. Now, Tuke's just this year come onto our leadership group. He's only been with the group for 2 years, but made a huge impression. His recommitment for another couple of years was fantastic. But along with his housemate, Peter Wright, back around Christmas, and Kalamar Chi, it's great that the young guys are recommitting to the club and seeing a bright future up here.
I guess one of the things us down here in Melbourne don't really understand is how much of a football club it's starting to feel like, Andrew. I mean, we know you're making progression. And even a couple of years ago, was it last year when there was a supporter having a crack at Gary Ablett Jr.? And, you know, even down here, it's like, oh, well, it looks like they're getting into it a little bit. I mean, how's it tracking as far as feeling like a football club?
Yeah, I've heard it said just in the last week in particular, we feel like a real club now, and that's come from a range of different sources. It does feel that way. We've got a fantastic stadium. We've got a proper training facility. There's a real maturity about the list now. It feels like, and the fans are starting to show some passion, as you point out. So it does feel like we are a real AFL club, and that's the spot we've been striving to get to.
What's the membership sweet spot, do you think, Andrew?
Look, at the moment, the driver up here is crowds. So our membership is around that 12 to 13 mark, which is a fair way off the AFL standard. But our benchmark in the Queensland market is getting crowds and people through the gates. And, we'd like to see that pushing up towards those 20,000 mark against some of the bigger games. And then we'll build a membership base off the back of that. So that's what we're looking for this year, much bigger crowds at Metricon Stadium.
And that CBA, just finally, it looks like it's going to all come to resolution pretty soon. Step forward for everybody. It's got to make you happy, hasn't it?
Yeah, it would. Obviously, I haven't heard the latest of where it's at, but the sooner we can get that resolved and just focus on getting into the footy season, we all know where we're heading, that would be a good thing.
Is it top eight this year, Andrew?
Look, our challenge to the guys is we just need to see improvement. Let's just get some more wins and some consistency and see where that takes us. So, we just need a good start to the season.
And as you look out that beautiful window of yours, Andrew, you've been watching Gary Ablett Jr. on the track. He's out there all the time.
He is. He's training exceptionally well. Really good this time of year. He's ready to go. And as is the rest of the list, we just can't wait for games to start now. That's where we'll start to see where the progress is.
Good on you, Andrew. Thanks for joining us. We do appreciate it. Go well in 2017 and good luck.
Thanks very much, guys. Appreciate it.
Hey, Marco.
Yeah?
We've got a very special guest that's just arrived.
Who have we got?
Jared Lyle. He's had 3 under off the stick today in pretty tough conditions too. Jared, welcome.
Thanks, mate.
How'd you go?
Yeah, look, I actually played really nice. The wind was howling at times today and made it very difficult to judge shots, but I kept myself out of trouble and hold a couple of putts and, yeah, just hit it nicely.
You ever had a bad back?
No, why? Because I carry my stomach. Is that
I'm going to Mark Allen. Mark Allen is back in the studio. He's don't listening in. Crook back, couldn't make it down. I was just wondering if it's an excuse or if it's actually Ridgey Didge.
Nah, mate, I'd play through it if I was...
I would have towed you up this week, Jez. Hey, Jared, tell me this, Jared. Down there, it's pretty right next to the beach, and it's a tough course in the wind. How many club wind was it in the afternoon? Because I know David Brands, 8-under in the morning, that's a very good score. But honestly, how many club wind was it, the Savo, to shoot 3-under?
Mate, at least a 4-club wind at times. Sort of, it teetered between 3 and 4. So, you know, I hit a 4-iron from 165 metres, so it was kind of, you know, it was all over the place.
What about the condition of the course? We pump it up, but you get to see all the best courses regularly. Is it in good nick?
Mate, it's in great nick. I tell everyone asks me questions about, you know, what's the best golf course you've ever played? And I say, give me anything that's in Australia, you know, Sandbelt down here, yep. Sydney, and we're rivaling the best courses in the world easily. And you know, here's a different kind of golf course where it's a bit linksy. You get off the fairways, a bit of tufty kind of grass that, you know, you can get a good lie, get a shocker. And, you know, we're very lucky to have this kind of calibre golf course in our backyards.
And the girls playing alongside, it's a different format. You wouldn't, you don't do it pretty much throughout the year at all.
I think this is the only time you do it.
And is it different? Do you get to... Do you watch them play as well?
I tell you what, I actually think this is the best concept I've seen. You know, to have the guys and the girls playing at the same time, you know, interchanging groups and doing all that. I think it's... Golf needs something to jazz it up. And you know, the guys down here, Golf Victoria and, you know, the Victorian government have really pumped this up to be one of the best tournaments going around in Australia now. And, you know, to be able to have, you know, the support of the Ladies European Tour and all that kind of stuff as well, it's a great concept, and, you know, they make the range smell nicer anyway with all their perfumes and stuff. So
that's true. That's actually very true.
It is. So don't worry. The boys have never looked sharper. They have to. They don't want to let their appearances go. Hey, Jared, the other thing that's super important down here this weekend is Challenge, the official charity partner. You're a huge part of it. You went through a battle yourself. How are you feeling, and how's your health at the moment?
Yeah, look, mate, health's fine. I've got some tests coming up in just over a month's time. So I go into the hospital and...
Do you get nervous with those?
Every day.
Yeah.
Every day. Like, it's pretty much the night before I just lay in bed and stare at the ceiling all night and think about, you know, the worst, I guess, and which you shouldn't do, but it's very, very hard to fall in that trap where you sort of... You've been given bad news a few times in your life now and you just sort of... You wonder, you know, what's coming up. And... you know, and then you go there and you see your doctor and he goes, I'll see you in 6 months, and that's the best...
Awesome.
The best time to say goodbye to someone and, you know, see him in 6 months' time, because I don't like looking at him and I'm sure he doesn't like looking at me. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's a good feeling when you can always walk out of there and...
And the golfing family's a powerful one too. I see the love when you walk through that, because they know you've been on a journey.
Yeah, mate. Look, I've had tremendous support from, you know, the guys here in Australia, the guys in the US, guys in Asia, you know, all the places where I've been and played, there's always been someone. And, you know, I've got some pretty good mates over in the US, one guy in Canada, I've never met him. I've spoken to him on the phone probably 4 or 5 times, and he just reached out to me through Facebook and said, mate, I'm going through the same rubbish as you've got. Any chance you could give me a call? And I picked the phone up and I called him straight away. And, you know, I reckon I spoke to him for a couple of hours about 3 or 4 months ago just to see how he was going. And, you know, it's always nice to dumb it down a little bit for people and, you know, not scare the living daylights out of them, but just explain to them on a lower level about, you know, what they've got to look forward to and what they haven't got to look forward to. Mm.
Jared, Mark Robinson here. I just might be an extension of Marco's Golf for Flogs program, right? Because I'm a flog when it comes to golf. But you said something at the start of this interview about... It's a 3-club or a 4-club, and I thought, oh, I don't know exactly what you're saying. And then you said, oh, you hit a 4-iron 160 into the wind. How, if you let go on your 4-iron, how long could you hit it?
Oh, look, on average, it's probably 190 metres.
And you were using, so to describe the wind today, and you're hitting 4-iron 160, did you say?
Yeah.
Knock it down 30 or 40 metres, so it's a fair bit.
Yeah. We normally use a 7-iron. Hey, you must be proud, mate. I read today, Robert Ellenby started the charity, and Ox was just talking about it then. Robert Ellenby started. You're a big part of it now, and you're a big, it was part of your life growing up and getting through it. But $30 million that Challenge has raised now. Mate, congratulations. It is ridiculous how much money that you and Robert have raised over the years. Congratulations, mate, and play well tomorrow.
Yeah, thanks, mate. It's nice to be a part of something and know exactly, you know, what you're doing. And, you know, because I've been there. I've been one of the members of Challenge. I've sort of got support from them. And now I'm in a position where I can give back and help support them a little bit as well. So I feel very honoured that I can play just a small part in it.
Now, have you blocked September out of your calendar?
For back the D's?
Back here for the Mighty Demons, you
mate,
think?
I'm actually very pumped about the D's.
I think they'll be good.
You know, to hear last year that we had finals chances.
Yep.
We haven't heard that in a while, mate.
No,
and
it's too long.
You know, 55. Now I'm confident. I'm going to get to a few games. I'm going to give the boys a rev up. And
that's what we need.
Might even take them out for a game of golf mid-season and just, you know, get in their ears.
Well, good man. All the best. Hit them well tomorrow. What time stay off tomorrow? Early?
7:50.
Hit them straight. 500 or 600 would be nice.
I'll take it.
66. Thanks, 66
thanks,
tomorrow for Jared Lowell. Good on you, Ox. Well done. Good on you, Jared Lowell. Well done to Chad.
On 11:16 SEN, Mark Robinson.
And it's you, Mr. Robinson. Jesus loves you more than you would know.
Hello,
Robbo.
Hello, Ox. I finally come into the studio when you're sitting at 13th Beach, are you?
I'm down here at 13th Beach. It's home. Over one of the great golf courses on the planet.
Home is.
Home. That's your home track, isn't
hey,
it?
Hey, and someone just said in a nugget, Robbo, that I reckon applies to you.
What is it?
You don't fry bacon in the nude.
That's a little nugget of clarity for you.
God, no, you wouldn't do that, would you?
No.
You wouldn't do that.
No. Cause,
how has your off-season been, Robbo?
Hey, congratulations too, mate.
On?
Making it to 50. that's a super effort. I had you around 44, and you've done well. You've done well.
I was pinging myself for that time as well. Yeah, it was good. It was good. Had a small gathering in Bali and I stuffed up my leg and had just another smaller one back here for the immediate family. So, yeah, it was all good. 9 weeks off. Terrific season last year. I mean, the amount of conversations you have with people over summer about the footy of last year and then to start this year with all this, not nonsense, but everyone's sort of knee-jerking, to borrow Mick Malthouse's word he said today, knee-jerking to these theories and changes, and I thought, God, this usually doesn't happen to about round 8, right? When we start running out of good things to say about the footy, and then we start attacking the game and wanting to pull the game apart. But we'll get onto that a bit later.
Yeah, you know, Robbo, funny you say that because I played golf with a couple of different blokes in the last few weeks, and the first conversation that comes up about footy was, how good were the doggies?
Yep.
How good was it? And for footy, I think if GWS had won, I think a lot of fans would have felt ripped. They would have felt that it was too orchestrated, that it was so skewed in their favour to get early success, that these sides like the Doggies and St Kilda and Melbourne and sides that have waited a long time, that they would have missed their opportunity. But for the Doggies to win, it gives me as a Melbourne person hope, and I think St Kilda people would feel genuine hope that it can be done, that these droughts are there to be broken.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, Ox. And it's everyone says, oh, how good were the Dogs? We forget other games in the final series last year. Seriously, everyone remember the GWS Sydney Swans first final up there? That was as brutal a football as I'd ever seen played. You know, and then the Isaac Smith missing the goal after the siren, Hawks lose.
That's right.
There's two other games in the final series that they don't even get a mention, but because of the Dogs, you know, four on the road, two on the road, you know, and winning it, and just the joy. It was almost the perfect football season. We always say, can we replicate it, and can footy get better? I think so, Ox, because what the Dogs have done, and I think you highlighted it really, really well, what the Dogs have done have shown that, yes, it is an even competition. You get your act together, you play a certain brand of football. You can win. You can win games of football and you can win finals. And then that gives hope to everyone. And we always say it's an even competition. And I think it's going to be more even this year than last year. And I think we've been saying that every year on. We've got a lot of teams improving and challenging. And we've got a lot of question marks on teams. We've been up there for a while and how far could they be falling?
Mm. Now, Robbo, it's been well publicised in all the big papers that they've all had their meeting with Gill. So you're in as the chief. Everybody's in. I read your paper,
mm-hmm.
and it's not even close to going to 18. It is an 18-man game on the field from this point onwards. We've dabbled, but it's going to be 18.
Quote, unquote, from Gill.
Yeah, I read another paper, and they're saying it's on. There's a move for 16. Could,
maybe. Yeah,
it's a chance.
There might be a chance.
How does that happen? How can you have one and then the other?
Really good pickup by you, Marco. Really good pickup. Shows that you read both newspapers. Mm. Yeah, it was a bit strange. Gill was saying he thinks that AFL is an 18-man team. Mm. And I've been going for, 150 years, and that won't be changing. It will not be changing. And then I pick up the other paper, and it says, 16-a-side, it could happen. It ain't going to happen. And Kevin Bartlett's right on this.
Mm.
Everyone thinks that Kevin can go on about this charter, but this charter was a very important document. It's a point of reference for the laws of the Game Committee and the AFL Commission. 18 aside. And what do you call them? Dills and Drongos or whatever he called them last week. But it won't change. Now, for the other paper to say, well, it could, you know, could.
Hey, Robbo.
Could. A bit of scaremongering. Oh, yeah, we didn't put it on the... we didn't rule it out. It's like saying, you know, Mark Allen denied that he I'm just trying to think of something appropriate.
No, I denied.
you denied. So you do. You get the accusation out, right?
Yeah.
But lead it with you're denying it.
Yeah.
And say, well, hang on, that's not fair.
Well, the old classic is he denied he bashed his wife.
Yes. Is that an old classic?
Is the old classic.
And then they say, oh, he bashed his wife. He goes, no,
bashed his... The headline goes, Mark Allen denies he bashed his wife.
So the other paper was, is Gil McLachlan hasn't ruled it out.
Robbo.
He hasn't ruled it in either.
Robbo, when you get invited into a briefing via the AFL, whether it's Gil McLachlan, do you sit down with triangle sandwiches, Milo and a...
Milo.
How does it work?
No,
do you sit around a round table and Gil puts up a PowerPoint presentation, or does he say, rightio, knuckleheads, I'm sick and tired of you guys writing this and this. This is the actual facts.
No, Gil doesn't really care what people write. He really doesn't. He understands the media machinations, and if he believes it to be totally unfair, he'll say something. But generally, it's what keeps the monster called football rolling around. That, you know, what happens during the week and the games on the weekend. Of course, now you go in there. I think we had a water, no sandwiches. We're in the on the board table, which is a good little room to go in because they've got all the portraits of all the heads of AFL going back 150 years.
Nice.
And you just scan them around. It's like
any shockers.
Any shockers. I don't know if men in the late 1800s were looking fantastic, to be honest.
Hey,
I just
one more.
not enough colour, maybe. I don't know. They're a bit pasty.
One more because we've got to hit a break. And I'm not testing. In the Age article that Caroline wrote, it says a journalist asked about James Hurd.
So yes.
Who's the journalist?
Me.
So what's the story?
What do you mean you asked about James
Hurd? Why is it written that way?
Well, there's two things. James Hurd was the biggest sort of off-field incident involving a football person. So we asked Gill about why the AFL did not make public comment on it. He explained that they've contacted people close to him. I found out that was Dean Solomon, a good friend of the Hurds, and Dean Solomon's sort of like a conduit between the Hurds and all his teammates. And the second question I asked to Gill was, do you think the AFL has any blood on its hands?
Over what did Gill say?
And Gill looked at me and said, I think that's totally unfair.
What do you think?
No, I wouldn't say it's totally unfair. I thought it was a Fair question. I was a bit surprised that the A's were worrying about what other journos were asking questions to write about them, when there's some really bigger stories around, such as the one on the back page about the pay dispute almost coming to an end, which is good news for everyone.
Yeah.
As for the Herd, you know, James Herd took on the fight, went for 4 years. In my opinion, the AFL didn't fight fairly at times. Forced Herd to take 12 months off. Herd was found not guilty of anything by the official bodies, but their governance one at Essendon that he had to take. So, you know, they forced him to take the year off. I think there's a little bit of blood there. How much? Others can determine. And the AFL and Herd and those people involved can maybe decide. But I thought it was a reasonable question. You know, the footy's coming. We know that. The tennis is finished. It's in February. We've got games in a couple of weeks' time. And just yesterday, myself and David King did 18 videos on the 18 teams. Myself and David have also written about the 18 teams
for the magazine.
For that magazine coming out very soon, a big 100-page glossy with is bigger and better, and they usually good. Say and buy it in good.
He's been working on that for 3 months. How long did it take you?
Oh no, it's solid.
Yeah.
Because everyone reads it, and you just can't be flippant, and you've got to go back to last year and look at things and games and influence of players, and so you're sitting in the middle of January. And you think, oh, football's so far away, but you've got to get really focused on footy. And, and I thought to myself, what am I going to write when I get back? And just the conversations, again, you have over summer and you talk about footy and everything. Geelong kept on coming into the conversation. And a lot of things about Geelong. Chris Scott.
Your Geelong boy's down here today, actually, Robbo.
Is he? Go and ask him.
Model up down here just before.
Your first article.
Get him on and say congratulations for coming back in better nick than what you came back last year, because that's a plus straight away. But last with Geelong, it's just a really curious year coming up. You know, Chris Scott. I'm not saying that Chris Scott's under pressure, but you know, he'd want to compete.
Your first article of the year last year was this year
was on Geelong.
Was last week. It was an absolute cracker. And you're talking about the 60 minutes that they will regret?
No, the 60 minutes of softness.
Thank you.
I don't think they're a soft side, but they had 60 minutes of softness. A bit jumpy football in the final against Sydney. And it was like 50 points to 3 or something at one stage. The game was over. Now, they fought back a little bit in the first half, but in the second half. But I was thinking to myself, do you ignore that Ox? Do you just say, righto, or you sit down and you say, that will never happen to this football club again while I am here, says Chris Scott, and the players sit there and say, that will never happen again. That is a reference point. This is where our club needs to go to, and we've got to get tougher, and we've got to get mentally tougher so we can withstand a 60-minute blitzkrieg and high pressure from the Swans.
The one thing I know about Geelong is that they feel highly offended that people believe that they are a two-player team, in that they are a Selwood and the Dangerfield side. And I know that burns many of them, that they believe that they are a much more competent side than that, and rightfully so. Two players can get you so far, but you're only as good as the depth that you have. And I think Geelong have got good depth. Is there complete harmony? No, I don't think there is. I think there are questions on Chris Scott. There are questions on the way that he and the footy administration have exited players. I think there
Which is not easy, Ox. It's not
never easy.
Easy.
And there's no right or wrong way. Yeah. You know, we're seeing Hawthorn do it in a different way, where they have open conversations. And the respect from Clarko to the players has probably never been greater. But at the same time, does that work for every club? No, it doesn't. Hey, you know, and it's hard to say goodbye to stars. So, no, it's not total harmony. If what your point before, Robbo, about Motlop coming back in shape, there's a dogged determination that that was an aberration. That you know, 50 minutes or 60 minutes of footy was unacceptable. And the crowd, or the pride that the Geelong Footy Club has, will ensure that they don't go back down that path.
I want to ask you both about their midfield personnel. Now, Champion Get Data, they bring out their books and they do the numbers every
Fantastic
single year.
Book.
The top seven midfielders at the Cats. Now, if you're a good club, you'd expect them to be elite or above average.
Mm-hmm.
Their top seven mids, only two are elite.
Which we know.
That's right. Dangerfield and Selwood. No one's above average. And average and below average, they've got Lissarves, Guthrie, Duncan, and then below average, Cowan and Scott Selwood. That doesn't read that well. Apart from the two Lissarves, elite.
Lissarves fell away from, I think, a best and fairest year to having a really, really poor year.
No mids above average.
Getting Smith, so I don't know if it changed the way. He was a bit of a ruck rover, third man up kind of character. He didn't have anywhere near the year he had. Motlop came back heavy, had a couple of really good games, and then didn't have very, very good games at all. And Mitch Duncan seems to play at a pretty solid level, but that's the level. But
he's got an excuse. He got pancaked. Shane Mumford pancaked him at Canberra, and it took him a long time to get over.
We're talking weeks.
Well, I'm telling you, Robbo, if you saw the hit...
I did see the hit,
I was
mate.
There live, and he nearly killed him.
I did see it,
and I know
it would
shook
hurt.
Him up. It
and
shook,
it would
it shook
hurt.
Him. No, I don't think it was about the hurt. I think it was about the psychological...
Really?
Yep.
So would tell me, try and get into his head and tell us what he was thinking.
Well, I don't think he was thinking much. I just know that it frightened him, and it was a big, big, big hit. He never played good. He didn't have an explosive game after that. It really knocked him around.
What do you think Mitch Duncan would be doing if he was driving around right now and listening to you talk to him about him like that?
No, I'm not saying that he shirked the issue at all. I'm saying that that hit took more out of him than people ever knew.
Okay, like, that's one
really
excuse.
It rocked him. Like it, and Robert, we've seen it many times where players cop a hit and it takes them ages. Who was Jordan Lewis hit?
Jordan Lewis got hit by Jared Harbrow.
And Jordan Lewis, it took him 10 weeks.
Jordan Lewis was back on the ground a quarter later.
No.
He went back on, but he didn't touch the ball for the next 3 weeks.
Yeah. Oh, it was even more than that. And he even said, that knocked him, knocked him for six.
Yeah. It's funny. I agree with the Ox, but Duncan played the following week, and I do agree. I agree with you. He had 29 disposals the week after the Mumford incident against Brisbane. But I'm with you. I reckon that was the start of a fall away in form.
That's fine, and I'm not sitting here professing to know everything about football, but that's okay. We'll give him that excuse for a little while. Mitch Duncan has played some sensational football. He really has. You look at him and going, man, you're outstanding. But then comes to some big games, and he's not. And I fear that that second tier group at Geelong, psychologically, I don't know if they say, oh, it's all right, Selwood and Dangerfield are in there, they'll do it.
Okay. No, I don't think that's the case.
No, okay. I'm only asking. Because what happens, Ox? You can't have the two standout players like Dangerfield and Selwood in that Sydney final and the huge gap, right? So by coincidence, all rest of them had a really poor game except those two?
It can be infectious. It can be infectious.
Well, we've got psychological issues in.
Yeah, well, maybe. But I'm not going to say the Cats are crap because they had 60 poor minutes. I've seen a lot of sides do that in finals and come out the next year and actually stick it back up those
I'm
doubters.
Not saying they're crap at all. All I'm saying is that you need to win flags. They've had a really good team. They're one of a few teams, I think, four seasons in a row that won 17 games. Really consistent. Mate, that's great talk. Great talk to the people at the annual general meeting. But we're about winning flags, isn't it? We're about winning flags. And when you're in the contention mode for 4 or 5 years, you've got to win a flag. And when they had an opportunity last year, and they could have won it last year, they go up against Sydney's tough boys in the middle, and the Cats were jumpy for 60 minutes. Okay, you're not ready. You're not ready. Now, you can pat them on the back and say, oh, yeah, but there's this and that, and there's this and that. You know, that's the new world order. It's okay, Yanni, you did really well. You finished fifth. Well done, well done. Or Dennis Pagan was on the phone today, I heard. Do you reckon Dennis Pagan would be saying that? Well, Dennis Pagan says, right, that is the line in the sand. We are never going to humiliate ourselves or embarrass ourselves on the MCG again, and we are going to train and we're going to play hard. And we can't just get to the finals and expect the high pressure to go up and we'll deal with it. Play high pressure football all year so you get used to it. Sydney do it. Sydney play the same brand of football nearly every week. Okay, and why do you think it holds them in good stead? And they've got their own issues. I mean, they've won one flag, lost two. They can't seem to get over the line in the last couple of years when everyone says at some stage of the year, Sydney are the best team in the competition. And then they fail. Okay? Now, we can continue to say, oh, bad luck, move on. Really good effort, John. Well done, buddy. Getting you 1.4. Good to see you. But they're not in the history books, mate. It's all about flags. You know that. And I just think Geelong, there's a lot of urgency and there's a lot of reputations were hurt on that night.
Robbo, you lit up the phones. Let's get to them. Mark's in Greenvale. G'day, Marco.
G'day. How you going, guys?
We're well.
Look, Robbo, I understand what you're talking about with Geelong, but as a Sydney supporter, I really take exception to what you said.
Which one?
Nobody said Adelaide was soft the week before. The Swans were ferocious. To say that the Cats weren't ready for it are fine, but to say they were soft actually undermines how good Sydney were in that first half. And I really take exception to what you
said. Don't take exception. Just actually just point out that you're right. Sydney were superb in that first half. But the information from Champion Data says that Sydney's pressure was their season high that they applied. Whatever mechanism points they come up with, it was their season high. Geelong was 5 points behind and one of their season highs. So Geelong were actually putting pressure and having a go when Sydney had the ball. Okay? But when Geelong had the ball and Sydney were applying their pressure, they crumbled. Their kicking efficiency, the disposal efficiency, it was their worst of the year. They could not perform under that pressure. Now, you know, I know I've spoken to a couple of people about this. I spoke to two ex-coaches. One of them said to me that Geelong failed dismally the 1 metre rule. That is, when the ball is in within 1 metre, everyone's got different definitions. I'll give you a general one. When the ball is in 1 metre of it, you go. You go for that ball. Don't stop and don't hesitate. He said Geelong failed the 1 metre rule. And another coach said to me, he walked out at half time. He's like, he couldn't watch it. He was just so disappointed what he was seeing in Geelong. Now, I'm not saying anything here that Chris Scott and the players wouldn't know. They had a big think tank recently about this. So I think Scotty Selwood come out and spoke about it. Yeah, we've addressed it. We're going to tackle. That's fine. The tackling was okay. It was dealing with the pressure coming back. It was performing under pressure, Marco, as in golf, when... And which I've spoken to you about this, because I said, why didn't you make it? You've got every shot I know. Mm. You said, I didn't handle the pressure. Can I say that?
Yeah.
That's what happened.
There were times when I had chances to win that I didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, the pressure of performing. Mm. Now, Geelong, big half of football, the pressure, they just couldn't perform.
Yep. Another caller, Mark's in Bacchus Marsh. G'day, Margo.
Hey, gentlemen, how are you?
We're well.
Good, Mark.
That's good. If anyone loves sticking it to Geelong at the moment, it's me. But I'm actually going to go into bat for them. Robbo, mate, I hear what you're saying, but... both prelims being GWS and Geelong, they both had the week off. They both were asleep in the first quarter because they had the week off, and they were totally snoozy. GWS, when you look at the stats in the game against the Doggies, should have been down by 7 goals a quarter time in that prelim, but the Dogs didn't capitalise on their domination. So I put Geelong's first quarter down to the fact they came off a week's break and they were asleep. Just like GWS were asleep, but GWS didn't get hit as hard on the scoreboard as Geelong did.
What do you reckon, Ox?
Yeah, look, the week off has always been a debate. You would think you'd be able to run the game out better. You think you'd be able to you'd start pretty sharp, but it's amazing. You have a week off. It's proven time and time again. Just because you get the week off doesn't mean you're going to perform better. So, look, you've got to be up. You've just got to be ready, and that's the coach's job, isn't it?
I reckon it is too.
It's an accurate assessment of where we were and where we're at. We expect to play finals, and it's the coach's job to mould the program and to provide the environment for the players to be able to go out and do the job. Clearly not where it was 20 years ago, where it was probably coach and a right-hand man who did it all. You know, the industry's probably a little bit more, and clubs are a little bit more organised than that and spread the load a little bit more, but... invariably, the senior coach is the guy that needs to pull it all together. So I absolutely take responsibility for that.
Nathan Buckley there on Brekkie last week. Collingwood expecting to play finals. He's certainly going to be one of the coaches that everyone will be following.
He's a competitive bastard, isn't he? Mate. Bucks.
Yep.
You know,
I think they all are.
But Bucks is not making excuses. Bucks put it on the line in the interview last year, which won the best radio interview of the year. When he said, "I fully know there's going to be some issues if we don't play finals." Okay, he's not ducking and diving, and he's been given a couple of opportunities for outs. You know, injuries and this and that and all that. He doesn't take them. You know, I don't know if people like Nathan Buckley or not. I wouldn't know. I like him. Okay, we had some issues last year, but I like him. I like how he never ducks, ever, and he takes responsibility.
When you wrote that story about Collingwood, Robbo, last year with their players, 20-odd players.
A bit less than that, but anyway.
Or 19. 20-odd. 20-odd.
No,
that's close.
No, no, I didn't say that. But if
no, 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 no. I said 20-odd, which means thereabouts.
Right, keep going.
Could.
Up to.
Or did. Was there a lot of fallout between you and Bucks?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh. Yeah.
It was that story.
Yeah, oh, and a couple of stories after that. But we
see, that's
soldiered
where you're competitive as well.
We soldiered on the show.
Do you still talk?
No, I haven't spoken to Buck since last year, since the season finished.
Been out to dinner?
Well, if I haven't spoken to him, I certainly haven't gone out
to
dinner.
That would have been a quiet meal. You just sat opposite each other and looked at doing
each
other's
eyes. We had one big blow-up, but, you know, I like Bucks and I respect him, but there's no denying the pressure on Nathan Buckley. He goes into this season with 1 year on his contract.
Is he under more pressure than Ken Hinckley?
Oh, clearly. Ken Hinckley...
No, I'm telling you
hang on.
Not in Adelaide.
But we're not in Adelaide. In Melbourne right this year, you know, it's Buckley and Hardwick. And no disrespect to Damien Hardwick. Nathan Buckley is an icon of this game. It's the biggest club. It's perhaps the club's greatest ever player. He's coaching his, fifth or sixth year, and they've gone tumbling down a ladder every year. God help them if they're zipping five. I mean, I don't know what will happen. Will they sack him? I don't think so.
What is the tipping point? Oh, I actually want to ask you.
Well, you've got them top four, Marco, so you're thinking that ain't going to happen
but
at all.
But Gary Pert was on this program and said, hey, we're not judging him on finals. But there's got to come a stage where a football club's got to say, we've given you enough time, mate. 6 years. We've given her enough time and we're going bang, 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 bang. Now, sometimes I think we get confused, and it's not confused. I think sometimes we get impatient. A long time ago, at the turn of the century, which is a long time ago, clubs were given coaches 5-year deals. We've got a 5-year plan. Mm. Right, we're going to turn it around in 5 years.
That was Ronald Dale, wasn't it?
Was it
Brass.
At Melbourne. And 5-year plan. And then clubs just started giving 5-year plans out, right? Now, my issue is that's too soon, right? That is too soon to turn it around. Because generally a coach comes in at the bottom where the coach has been sacked. You come in, what are you doing? Brendan Bolton, righto everyone, we've got a long-term plan. We're not putting years on it. We've got a long-term plan and this is what we're going to do. The difference with Bucks... When he took over, they were runner-up in the grand final. So Mick left, or Mick got pushed out the door, or Mick accepted the contract or whatever it was. Bucks took over at the top. Usually coaches take over at the bottom and get an opportunity to build up. Bucks took over from the top. And in the next 5 years, they've spiraled down to whatever, 12th, 13th. To get back up might take another, to be a real contender.
Yeah.
Might take another 4 years.
So what is the point of no return? I mean, there's three clubs. There's Port, there's Richmond and Collingwood. If they're all 1-9, if they're all 1-9, who goes first?
Richmond.
Yeah, I think so too. Although I can see Port Adelaide being ruthless as well, that, you know, because they're out of the way, I can see them being very ruthless.
I'd love to know what our South Australian friends think, because I spoke to somebody that had been living in Adelaide and... They believe that Ken, and I love Ken Hinckley. I've had a lot of great chats with him, but he was saying that he believes that Ken Hinckley's has enormous pressure on him. That if they get off to a slow or sluggish start, that you know what it's like in Adelaide. They build pressure pretty quickly.
All right, let's take some calls. 9429 1116. If you want to talk about the Pies, the Tigers, Port Adelaide, if you're over there listening, give us a yell. 9429 1116.
1-9, you reckon?
If they're one,
it might be all gone, mate.
Okay. If they're, what about if all clubs are 1-6? Does anyone go? Nah.
No.
1-7?
They're gone.
There might be two.
Yeah, the chicken shit
could
be
three.
The chicken shit will be at Punt Road.
Yeah. George is in Northcote. G'day, Georgie.
Yeah, g'day, guys. Welcome back, Robbo.
G'day, George.
Look, with the Cats, Mark, I have to say I really agree with you in regards to the champion data backup stats. And I know there was a player, senior player a couple of years ago when they talked about Geelong and they had a really good bunch of kids that are between 23 and 26. But I actually think that those kids haven't come on. They've lost Caddy and they've lost Christian to Brisbane. And I think they are going to be a side that will rely on the top two to sort of get them over the game. And, you know, I think from Stanley being injured, Mitch Clark didn't work out. And I actually think Geelong will be lucky to make top four. So I actually think that's a big gap between their younger players not coming up and supporting the older players.
It's funny, you know, when people say, God, you rely on Dangerfield and Selwood too much, I would suggest that most teams rely on their best two players a lot. You know,
that's a good point.
Well, Collingwood relies on Mike Pendlebury and Treloar.
Yep. But this is a midfield. That's kind of a team within a team, isn't it? A midfield.
Yeah, it is. It is. There's a midfield group. Do they run deep?
Mm.
No. There's a lot of questions, Mark. Where are we? February 12th or 13th? I don't know what the date is.
It's good fun talking about it, mate. Steve's in Boronia. G'day, Steve.
Evening, gents.
Steve.
Not talking about Supercross today because you've honed in on a little point that makes my blood boil. I'm really passionate about it. You're asking what the tipping point will be for any case to be sacked. I don't care if it's Buckley or as a Tiger supporter, it's Hardwick. The tipping point will be when sports journalists start putting enough pressure on AFL clubs where they need to be seen to be doing something in the public domain so they make a call and sack a coach. More often than not, prematurely, it really annoys me. It's an old adage, trial by media, but trial by sports media. The clubs just get back into a corner where they need to be seen to be doing the right thing, and often it's not necessarily the right thing by the club.
So it's Robbo's
fault.
Give
us an example.
Yeah, it's your fault, Robbo.
So it's the media's fault that all coaches get sacked.
No. There are plenty of... I'm not going to go into every example, but there are plenty of examples throughout, I'm going to say history, but AFL history, where the clubs have their hand forced by just this wave of public opinion that gets absolutely fired up and generated on the back of a lot of media attention that is often unwarranted. That's my opinion.
Steve, give me your opinion then if Bucks is 1-7. 5 years into his sixth year.
I think behind closed doors, that's a decision the club needs to make, but not with the pressure of a rabid media pack.
Okay, so there's so we're not writing articles. Let's just say
no one's allowed to talk about it.
No one's speaking about it. What would your opinion be?
I think the club would need to have a long, hard look at it.
Steve. You're adding to the pressure, Steve.
Oh, Steve.
Thanks, Steve. Please. No more callers like Steve, please. We want you to make Vince, Daniel, and Daniel. You better be not like Steve. We want tough callers on this show. In this
we don't
hour.
Want added pressure, but what would you do? Well, they got some tough decisions.
Live from 13th Beach for the Oats Vic Open. Make sure you get on down and say, let's see the boys and the girls to incredible scores.
The wind's just dropped back, Marco.
Has it?
Just dropped back. A lot of players on the putting green.
Yeah.
Just saw Langer's drive past.
It was the eating.
Yep.
Yeah, no surprise. Yep. Mark Robinson, the Herald Sun Chief Football Writer, is here. And we're taking tough callers from this moment onwards on this hour.
I want to read out a text, Ox.
Howdy.
Hey, you're on air. How's this for a text? If Tigers are serious, they should be minimum 4-1 start. Should beat Carlton, round one.
Yeah.
If serious, we'll beat Pies, round two.
Yep.
West Coast at the G without Nat Nui are beatable. And we've got a good record at the Gabba where they play Brisbane. Okay. So Melbourne.
Then they play Melbourne at the Anzac Day.
So they should be a 4-1 start, according to this bloke.
I don't know.
What happens if they're a 1-4 start and he thinks that they're all beatable?
Trouble.
Big trouble.
But you don't write about it, Robbo.
No, not that much trouble. 1-4 is okay. If they win, they go 2-4, then 3-4, then everything.
Hang on, if they go 1-4 and they've played Brisbane,
really got round six. Hang
Carlton. There's only a couple of games. There's not many games you actually can pencil in for a win, to be honest. I wouldn't even pencil Brisbane in Brisbane for a win.
No, you can't pencil any in.
No way.
Because if you're off, you're out.
Round six, Adelaide in Adelaide.
No chance.
No chance. Western Bulldogs.
No chance.
And then round eight, Frio.
Where?
MCG. Then GWS.
They're going to be good, Fremantle. They're going to improve out of sight.
Now, if you pick up your best player, your second best player, and your third best player, that's going to help your situation.
Thanks, Vince. Daniel's next in Strathmore. G'day, Daniel.
Did we talk to Vince?
We didn't speak
sorry,
to Vince.
We'll go to Vince. Excuse me. Oh, I'm up looking at the drawer. I'm doing all kinds of stuff.
Hello,
g'day, Vince.
Vince.
G'day, fellas. How are you?
Good,
mate. Thanks for hanging on.
That's okay. I'm a Collingwood supporter, and I just think that our Achilles heel is going to be the backline, and God help if any Reed goes down. But if we're 1-7 at any stage, I think Buffy's gone.
Wasn't Reed playing forward, though?
No, I think when he came back, he did. I thought he went to the defence last
year. Now with no cloak.
No, he's playing back. He's
is
playing
he 100%?
Back. Yeah, they've been looking at Lachlan Keith playing forward.
Oh, of course, yep.
Correct.
I wouldn't be surprised at some stages he goes back there. He's a big body. It depends how Collingwood want to play. Now, you can play really, really good defensive football without super-duper key backs. And I'm not having to go at Joel Hamling or Fletcher Roberts. They're fine footballers, but they're not Ross Glendinning and Glenn Jakovich. And the Dogs and the way they played, their intercept players, cross half back, running, they were able to win the premiership, win four consecutive finals, with not, I would say, great players in those key positions. Now, Collingwood have picked up Lyndon Dunn, lost Nathan Brown, Lachlan Cleave comes back. Is it Shade? Is another player they've picked up in my play back there?
And
Shard and Ben Reed. But if they get some,
it's not deep though, is it?
It's not deep, but if you can get some really good interceptors and rebounders off the back line, and the defence pushes deep box, you can, as the Dog showed us, you can cover your deficiencies with a very good game plan.
Marco. You're backing top four with that back line?
I'm very strong with the top four.
You're not.
You might surprise.
You're not.
Daniel's in Strathmore. G'day, Daniel.
Mark.
Yeah, g'day, guys. Perfect scenario. Port Adelaide, Richmond, Collingwood, all 1-9. There's a joint press conference. Buckley walks in, goes straight to Port Adelaide. Hinkley walks in, goes straight to Richmond. Hardwick walks in, goes straight to Port Adelaide. They all win the last 13 games and they storm into the finals.
And they're all wearing the Three Amigos outfits. Oh, that would be funny. That would be.
Hey, boys.
If Fux got sacked,
I was going to ask the same question. But go on.
Do you think another club would chase him?
I was going to ask the same question. I think he'd be chased. I'm not sure where he'd do it. I was going to ask who would work again at the top level: Hardwick, Buckley, or Hinkley.
I think all three could. See? I think in particular Ken Hinkley has proven that he can coach.
I think Damien Hardwick has proved he can coach.
Yeah, I think Bucks has proved he can coach. So
I don't think Bucks has proven yet that he is a very good coach. You just got to look at the wins, loss, and the inconsistency through three seasons, where he started well, ended poorly in 2 years. The good news is he ended pretty well last year. It was the sort of complete opposite. Myself and Kingy were talking about this yesterday on the Super Footy videos about what is Collingwood's identity?
Marco knows. He's in the inner sanctum. Marco, tell us, what's Collingwood's identity?
We look at Collingwood.
Oh, I'm interested to see this year as well. I think you're going to see a brand new Collingwood.
From what? Well, going from what to what?
Brand new.
From going from seconds players in most weeks to players that they want on the park. I think it's going to be a very different Collingwood this year.
So you're saying that
through your depth,
you are going to have a better season in 2017 than 16.
I think personally, and I've said it a number of times, that Buckley has been a very unlucky general. But
no, I agree with that.
If you are an unlucky general, you are an unlucky general.
Robbo, clear one thing for me. Who finishes higher, Melbourne or Collingwood?
Well,
you've done your videos. Where did you have us?
I think Collingwood.
Yeah.
What?
Fair enough, too.